My name's Glenna, and I am an alcoholic. Pam tops me out and sounds sophisticated. I'm just an ordinary person. My sobriety date's February 22nd, 1978.
Glenna corrects this to 1998.
I have a sponsor that I am current with, and we get together on a regular basis. Occasionally, I get to sponsor other people. That gets me in the book better than anything else. I'm not good on my own at doing that. So, I get my home group is the Common Solution Group. We meet Thursdays, 7:30, Hinton Avenue Methodist Church in Charlottesville. I love my home group. Early on, I would hear people say, that they love their home group and it was the best in the world. And I thought, I'm not getting it. So, I don't know, I finally landed in a home group I love. it's like they're brothers and my sisters. And it's like, I don't know, different than family, but family. And it gives me a way to be accountable. I have a job in that home group, and occasionally having a job in a home group has helped me to show up when I didn't feel like going. I love my couch. We're buddies. I grew up in Roanoke. I was born in North Carolina. I grew up in Roanoke, and I got sober in Roanoke. Dad worked, mom stayed at home, she didn't have a driver's license, was not involved with a lot of stuff at school, because I didn't have transportation, and I studied, I worked hard for my grades, I got good grades. There wasn't any drinking in the home when I grew up. I have family members that are alcoholics or were. They're in the cemetery in Verona right now. My mom had some brothers who drank a lot and were estranged from their family and their family, their siblings didn't want to be around them. I saw that. We would go to Verona on the weekends occasionally and stay with my grandmother and my mom's mom. And I remember one of my uncles coming over one time. And we turned all the lights out, turned the TV off, and we were really, really quiet when he got there to the door. I've gone back to look at where this house is, and there's no way he couldn't have known that we were there, couldn't have known that we were not there. So anyway, they weren't going to let him in. They weren't going to give him any money. So that was my experience with alcoholism before I got here. I always kind of thought he was the town drunk, like Otis and Mayberry. I don't know that. I don't know. And maybe if we can get our family reunion started again, I can reconnect with some of my cousins and see how the family dynamics are. Maybe they have found a solution also. My dad's brother, he had a problem with drinking and like falling off the back of a pickup truck and breaking his leg. And he came and stayed with us one summer. And it took me and my sister, there's a shopping center really close by. We could walk. And we went to the ice cream store, to Heise Ice Cream. And the liquor store was next door. And at some point after we all got home together, Uncle Dave left. My dad just wasn't having it. I don't know if he had been drinking. I assume so, since he was gone abruptly. So so there's alcoholism in my family, and I do believe it can run in families. So I grew up, studied hard. We became active in church, and I was in church 3 days a week, or three times a week. And a president of the little youth group, going to the beach in the summer with the youth group, you know, being involved with the youth group. And before we got into that church, we were involved in another church, and something happened. I don't know what, but we quit going. And then, so my neighbors, I grew up on a dead end street, and my neighbors went to another church, and my sister started going with one of the girls down the street, and I was really jealous, and you know, I wanted, there was just something missing. To this day, I can't really pinpoint it. It's just I wanted a connection with something. And eventually we all started going to that church, and I was connected. I was active, went into college, and drinking was not allowed at all, but you could get expelled if you had liquor in your room. And the dorm mother, it was a little school, so you could tell. You knew the girls that were coming in late, and that they would be threatened with expulsion. And so I studied hard, and made decent grades there. And then, still not feeling a connection with God. Somebody questioned my belief, and I couldn't explain it. And now I've learned, I don't always have to explain spiritual things. They just are what they are to me. So I pulled away from God at that point. And then I was on my own, my roommate, we went to, a group of us had gone to a conference in school, and they could get away with drinking. They didn't get carded. I got carded until I was 40 years old. I was around some drinking, not a lot, but a way to fit in with them. And so forgot where I was going with that, but getting out of school and drinking looked glamorous to me, and I could romanticize it, and some wine and cheese and crackers and whatever I was watching on TV, I don't know. So right from the beginning, I was drinking by myself, and I didn't think anything about it because it was just wine and cheese and crackers. And I believe it. Oh, and the disco era was out then, and there was this fella I was dating, and I was a little bit older than he was. So, you get thirsty when you're dancing. So, I could get a mixed drink at a dance, and it was a a long time later that I realized that I thought, you know, I didn't really lose any relationships over my drinking, but he picked somebody else. That's the only guy that ever dumped me. But it took some time away from alcohol for me to get that. So, you know, I'm drinking alone some, and then this other fella enters my life, and he's popular, and has a million friends, and everybody likes him, and they drink, and I didn't drink. I was starting to. I didn't learn how to mix a drink until I was, I don't know, 25. Then some guy that I was dating had to show me because people were coming over. And he said, "You make the drinks." I was like, "What?" You know, I can pour a glass of wine, but I didn't know how to mix a drink. But I learned. I'm a good learner. You know, the progression of my drinking, you know, has helped me to fit in with this crowd, this fellow I was seeing. And, you know, and I didn't know how I would live without him. You know, I fell in love, and that's what they did. They partied and they drank. He went to high school, to military school. That's the first clue. And those military schools are good, but you know, there's a brotherhood, and they were tight, and they partied hard, and you know, and so I felt privileged to be able to party with them, and so it helped me to fit in and to chit chatting with other people is just not my big thing. I am learning, and it's taking some work and some effort on my part, you know, to think of you and not what I'm saying necessarily and how to talk. I do better with small groups versus a large one, but, you know, so early on, my drinking was by myself and the effect of the alcohol. And I didn't get that until a long time after being sober. You know, I thought the effect produced by alcohol, just like, I didn't like being drunk. And it hit me, you know, it was the fitting in and getting along and the dis-ease of the day being abated and you know, to do away with all the stuff in my head left over from work and you know, criticism about assignments and just stuff and to help that to go away in the evening. That's the effect alcohol gave me. It helped me get through my day in that aspect. So the drinking at home, because everybody came to our house. We got married. I'm married to that guy. We had 3 kegs at the wedding. I had to give one up. Didn't open one of them, so we gave that one back. But it was a party. Our wedding was a party. It was really fun. I'd do it again, just maybe not with the alcohol, but you know, we just had people, friends, casual, and get together, and it was fun. And drinking was fun. I didn't like the hangovers though, and early on, I had hangovers, and they got worse and worse and worse. And trying to go to work with this hangover, then nothing would help. you know, I would go, I would be hungry, so I would eat something after I got to work. And I did this experiment. You know, I thought, well, what happens if I do drink something in the morning before I go to work? You know, is that going to help me? And so I did that, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm like drunk where I left off the night before. It's what it felt like while I was driving. And I thought, oh boy, you know, I can't do like that. And, you know, hearing about, you know, the morning drink, and did you ever have a morning drink? And, you know, for a long, 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 long time, I said, no, I didn't have any morning drinks. I didn't count Saturday and Sunday. Because that's what we did, everybody I was with. So it's Saturday and Sunday, yes, it's like, duh. You know, so my perspective and my thinking being a little twisted, and me not even knowing it, I think that's normal. Everybody I'm with, everybody I'm around, we all drink like that. I would get off work, come home, and there's 8 people coming over for dinner. I'm like, okay, whatever. I wanted to cook, so that was fine. I'm still not a cook, so he was a great cook. And, you know, and they grill or whatever, and, you know, the cleanup was mine, but, you know, work with the kids, you know, I had kids, working with them to do their homework and trying to get them to bed with a house full of people there, and bless their hearts. You know, so the first pregnancy, I didn't drink. I stopped drinking. Later in the pregnancy, my due date was in July, so at the summer at Smith Mountain Lake. So I had wine coolers. And, you know, that's not so bad, wine coolers. You know, that's my thinking. You know, and she was born, okay, no defects, bad labor. The monitor strip looked horrible, but, you know, she's fine, turned out fine. And so then, you know, I'm pregnant again. And I thought, well, God protected the first one, then he'll protect the second one. And I drank and drugged through that whole pregnancy. She does have some significant learning disabilities. She is a delight and a joy to be around. And she loves going to meetings. She's more social than I am. It's a big social event for her. I'm like, no, don't talk. Don't talk to somebody. And, you know, she's always been like that. And I get to meet a lot of people through her. We'd go to Walmart, and people would come up and start talking to her. And that's when Stranger Danger and people stealing kids and stuff was starting to come out. And then they would stop and they'd go, I know her from school. You know, these adults. And she's a trip. She lives with her dad. He's retired. He's got had time when she was in high school to spend with her. After I moved to Charlottesville, she stayed with him, and she is happy, and that's what I want. My drinking's progressing. I'm drinking more. I'm getting these horrible, horrible hangovers. Someone at work says they smell alcohol. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm eating gravy biscuits from Hardee's. And you know, so I didn't know what they're, you know, I played innocent. And but then it happened again. And my director came into the office and said somebody complained about my drinking, that they could smell alcohol. And I was going to be taken for a drug screen. So we had to walk up the street to the employee health office. And because she said someone smelled alcohol in my breath, I decided I wasn't going to open my mouth and incriminate myself any further. And just see where that would go. I had worked to back up. I had worked in a department and was in charge of that department. And a complaint had come in the first thing before the shift started that somebody had written some prescriptions on somebody's prescription pad. And she was supposed to come to work, and I thought, oh, great, I'm going to have to take her to... So somehow I knew the process that she was going to have to report to somebody and be taken. But some other supervisor down the hallway stepped in. I didn't have to do any of that. And also in that department, you know, people would refuse to work with, I'm a nurse, and some of the patients that would come in with a history of drug use and stuff. And some of the nurses, you know, there was a stigma, and they didn't want to work with them. And I thought, well, you know, they've got to get cared for. They deserve to be cared for. And I don't know, I was just real sympathetic toward them. and I had just done, you know, that part of an eight ball the night before or whatever. I took good care of them. I just treated them like anybody else and couldn't get that people would treat other people like that. That there was that stigma still. So I'm taken for this drug screen, and my director is telling me, "Well, I understand. You know, if you party, you know, really hard the night before, and then you come in and you've got this leftover, you know, from the night before." And I'm like, "Yeah." All the time. I wasn't going to say anything, though, because if somebody had smelled alcohol, I wasn't going to make it worse. So that, they took me for a drug screen and suspended me for 5 days. And would not let me drive home. So I had to call the husband for a ride. And that did not go over very good. And, you know, and this is a fella that was... fuss at me in the kitchen, you know, we all those people, you know, we were in the kitchen, in the dining room. It was kind of open area, you know, and I'm pouring another drink, and he's like, "Glenn, you're an alcoholic." And I'm thinking, "You drink just as much as I do." And, you know, but they didn't have any consequences. So, you know, so it became I got caught. You just got caught. And then the tune changed. You know, you just got caught. I don't know how you drink any different because that's what we did. And I would go to the liquor store on the way home from work. We lived like a half hour from town. You know, and get his half gallon and my half gallon, and did that 2 or 3 times a week. And, you know, in hindsight, people kind of helped him drink his drink. People didn't. I was a gin drinker. Not a whole lot of people drank that. So maybe I did drink more than him. I don't know. still have these $2 bills from the rebates from the liquor labels, you know, a little collection of them. That's, it says redeemable one time only, you know, forever. And, I was always sending it in, you know, getting a rebate back, getting paid for my drinking, you know, helps it not cost so much. not seeing the thinking that goes on with that. And it took quite some time away from alcohol to look at my thinking. So I'm at home waiting for whatever, the shoe to drop. And I had known, people, like that girl in the past that I used to work with. She didn't get fired, but there were things that she needed to do. I didn't know any of the details. And I thought, well, I don't know that I'll get fired, but, I didn't know what was going to happen. And so the second or third day I'm at home, I called employee health, our department, and said that I needed to talk with someone. And she said, is this work related? And I said, it's going to be. I thought if I could get the jump, then it would look better on my end. And I'd be one up on them. So anyway, I met with this counselor a couple times. He spent a good deal of time with me, and I was there one time, I think a couple of hours. He said, he worked with me until I could see that maybe I had a problem, and I could go that, I could say that far. He just kept pointing things out. And when I said that, then things changed during that meeting. And, we can get you into treatment. We can do this, and you'll need to do this, and you'll need to do that. And then all these requirements were starting to pile on, and I thought, oh, my gosh, how am I going to do all that? But to keep my career, I went along with it. I was thinking, the husband's not going to like any of this. So things changed quickly, and when I was headed home, I was going to have to tell him all these things that we're going to have to take, that I was going to need to be doing. Outpatient treatment, 3 times a week, I don't even remember anymore, in the evenings. So that was going to be a daycare situation. He worked a 24-hour shift on, 24 off. So he was going to be stuck with the kids if he was off. And otherwise, I was going to have to get a babysitter. And, some of my friends stepped up to do that. I'm really grateful they did that. They were there for a time. And my kids were looked after when I needed to do some things that I needed to do. They were 8 and 9 years old, I think, when I got sober. I was headed home from this meeting with the employee health person, some of you have heard this. Let me back up before that. Before I was taken to employee health that morning, the night before I had had another, we were always arguing, fight with the husband, and he left. He left the house. I thought, well, I must have been a bear to argue with. And I was just distraught. I thought he left. I went on and did some of the chores that I needed to do. The kids were in bed. I I was just at a loss, and I dropped, I know this sounds really dramatic, but I dropped on my knees, and I said, God, I don't think life is supposed to be like this, but I don't know what to do. And then 12 hours later, I'm getting a direct screen. So that was the start. And, you know, and then that whole time I was walking with my director to get my drug screen done, I'm thinking, God, this is not what I was talking about. This is not what I meant, you know, but I kept my mouth shut. And so, this employee health guy worked with me. I admitted I might have a problem. And on the way home, there had been a little shower, a rain shower. The sun was out, and I thought, there's got to be a rainbow around here somewhere. And I was looking all around. I was driving this way on a gravel road, and I looked, and I thought, okay, the sun's here. You have to look that way. And so then when I looked up, there's this rainbow right in front of me, right down the driveway where I was going. And so that was my second spiritual experience. And that was... to me, it was God was going to go with me through this journey and through this process. And it was just a moment of hope. It was amazing. So I had a lot of hoops to jump through. They kept telling us in treatment, the hoops are wider than you think they are. They're not this big. They're, you know, just keep doing. And then... If one of us was really balking, they said, and how long have you been sober? You know how to do this? And it just kind of threw it up in our face. And so I looked for people who had been sober, who had been through this process and tried to, sit beside them at a meeting. I was required to go to 3 meetings a week. And another professional meeting twice a month. When I separated from my husband, I had to put that in the separation agreement. It's kind of sad, but so that I could continue to meet my contract with the requirements that had been put on me and the paper trail that I needed to do. I had. Random drug screens for 5 years, a paper trail for 5 years, somebody from work having to fill out a little form. Yes, she comes to work on time. I always came to work on time. No matter what, no matter how bad the hangover was, maybe if I didn't show up, God knows where I'd be. And so in that, in that was not convenient for him. And we were on different paths. And I decided we needed to separate. And he didn't object. I proceeded with a divorce when it was time. My kids went to lots of meetings. But I took things for them to stay occupied with, or I put them in another room, and they were just old enough that, if I just could keep them in earshot, I knew they were okay, and they weren't tearing down the building or running through and talking during the meeting, and the way they grew up, there wasn't any language in a meeting that they hadn't already heard. So I wasn't really worried about that, but with the profession that I had, if we were at the mall and one of my patients had come up to me and like, blah, 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 they knew. I didn't ever say that I took care of them, that they were my patient, divulged any confidentiality for them. So, as my kids grew up, if I ran into somebody, they knew it was either a patient or AA. So they got that concept early. I didn't have to worry about them going, oh, I saw her in a meeting, and they're in school or something. That was not an issue, thank goodness. So my kids did go to lots of meetings. it's kind of nice to have AA know your family. Invisible support that I could get like that. I'm going to meetings. Try not to get too far in between meetings. Not to do 3 meetings right in a row and then go for a week and not have another one. That didn't seem to set well for me. It wasn't beneficial for me, my thinking, and I found that the longer when I stay away from AA, it's easier to stay away from AA, and it gets easier not to go somehow. So I still 3 to 4 meetings a week still works well for my brain and my recovery, and and God, the God that I had growing up was a punishing God. I think that was something with that church that we left. It was a fire and brimstone kind of thing, and that's the God that I knew, and the God that I couldn't live up to. I wasn't going to be good enough because I'm not perfect. I'm not completely sinless, and I thought, well, why go to church? I was drinking. It was really hard to go with a hangover. So my solution was not to go. So the God that became apparent to me that let me know that He was going to go with me through this process, that this God wanted me to be sober for whatever reason. That's the God that I have now, a loving God, and someone that is with me through this process. My prayers now are, God, keep me with you. Not God, go with me, but keep me with you today. And keep me clean and sober. So that's my prayer every day. I pray every day. We kind of got this in treatment. We had to do this relapse prevention plan thing, and I thought, well, what am I going to do every day? And after having been in AA, going to AA meetings, to hear people say that they pray every morning, read the literature when I can. Early on, it was difficult for me to retain what I read, so my solution was not to read it. But I found literature meetings, and I attended literature meetings, so I heard the book read, and the share was on the book, what was read. That's where any topic came from, until I could read. And they told us in treatment it might take 1.5 years or so, and it does. Usually what I read now lately, it changes. It might be the daily reflection. It might be a passage in the big book of, sitting in the car before I go to work or something. Right now it's a Grapevine magazine. They're short stories. They're people that are real and what they do for their recovery. And I get to read a little excerpt about it. That's what I read. And I'm a slow reader, so it can take me the whole month until the next issue comes out sometimes. Because I read a little bit. Getting ready for what's up, getting ready for work. I go to meetings. I have my home group. I have a job in their home group. When I showed up at the home group that I'm in now, I had just finished a service structure rotation, And I thought, all right, I'm going to just sit back and just be here for a while. I'm not going to do anything. And so the chairperson, we were giving out jobs, and they said, who doesn't have a job? Well, I was like, God. You know, I'm in the back. I'm just going to be there. And they said, well, I think the church would like for us to sweep up after ourselves. So I got to be the first sweeper of our home group. And that's a job now. And I get to orient people to it. Here's where the broom is. It's exciting. I'm a part of. So I'm 7 years sober, and a job opportunity comes up in Charlottesville, and I take it. It's my dream job. I'm going to be a part of a prestigious practice, and so I take this job. I'm good at what I do, if I may say so. And so I'm in this job, and I don't know anybody in Charlottesville, you know, and I'm still, so I'm in that practice of going to 3 meetings a week, and I'm lost, and so I don't want to get away from it. I want to stay with that. So, you know, my first night in Charlottesville, I unpacked my car and I went to work the next day and met with the realtor that night. So on a Tuesday night, I was at a meeting, and I went to that meeting regularly for a while until I changed home groups. And Google Maps was my best friend, so the structure that I was given early on, it was good. I'm not going to put any extra effort into anything I do necessarily, because, you know, and I can't see the exact benefit I'm going to get out of it. And I'm a if this, then that. And I want to see it. And I want to know. And that can get me into trouble with my recovery when I just need to rely on God. That third step in the treatment center, I thought, and none of the others bothered me. It was that step 3. Turn my will and my life over to the care of God. And the care of was the part that I was kind of skimming over. And even though I knew that God did for me what I couldn't do for myself, God got me here. And I know that God was going to go with me on this journey, but the care of God, you know, to let that happen all the time, coming to meetings helps remind me. God speaks through you guys, so if I don't show up, I don't hear God sometimes. So the home group that I was in when I moved here, they got their home group structure back up. I became the GSR, the General Service Representative. I went to assemblies and went to the district meetings and became the ADCM, the DCM, the Virginia Area Chair for Cooperation with Intergroup. I stayed involved. There was the DCMs were assigned to committees like in the at GSO. And the committee that I was assigned to was a man that was in charge of the recovery program that I had to sign up for, that I had to be a part of for 5 years. And I was like, okay, God. You know, you just keep showing up over and over, and it was just really neat to walk in recovery with this fella that had years and years of recovery. And when he asked me to step up to a position as chair at the area, you know, it was really hard to turn him down. I was like, okay. But I got to meet a lot of people. My world opened back up when I was drinking. It was whatever was going on in the kitchen or how to get people there. When I was at work, I was thinking about drinking, what we were going to be doing that night. I didn't know that was the possession of the mind. until after I was here for some time. You know, I never wanted one drink. It was three. I was just going to have three. And knowing that that's my thinking, and that's the allergy. When I put the one in, then I don't want just one. I want more. And 9 months sober, I was at a Christmas party, and the hostess was talking to her husband and said, "Do you want a sip of this?" Now, I am across the room, and I was like, I thought, and the thought in my mind was, I don't want a sip, I want the whole thing. You know, and not realizing what my drinking was like until after I had some time away from it, some time in recovery, to get recovery, and that have people take me under their wing. And, you know, when my sponsor wasn't available early on, you know, some ladies out where I lived, they took turns. And when one couldn't do it anymore, another one stepped up and let me help you work with that. I work on that. You know, so I did step 6 and 7 with her. I said, I have to tell you out loud. I'd already done a fifth step. That wasn't anything. But to go over my defects of character out loud with you, you know. So, you know, learning about being humble. You know, so my world has opened up. I know a lot of people. The opportunity to meet people. You know, God gave me this, and I want to be available. I want, you know, if my kids need it, I want it to be here for them. So I keep showing up. My sponsor currently, there's always somebody at work. It doesn't matter what job I have, there's one person. And this week I realized, this is somebody that I just would prefer not to ever be around ever again. And if I never saw her again, that'd be fine. And it pisses me off that I get to learn so much from this one person. And I'm like, oh, you gotta be kidding. I'm learning tolerance, acceptance, to be sure that my behavior is not a thermometer according to what's going on, that I can be a thermostat and change my attitude. Things like that, you know, this one person that I don't ever want to be around, that I can learn so much from, and God really has a sense of humor, and to be sure that and it's a daily thing, too, that I don't have to go and make an amends to her later to do everything I can do to not do that, and, you know, to change my behavior if it needs to be changed, or, support my coworkers in this atmosphere of drama and chaos or something. I don't know what it is. She doesn't care for me, but I'm there. She's there, and I just want to do a good job. The great fact is this, I'm going to close with this, and nothing else, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, that's my coworker, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our God, that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. So this is hope. Some hope for me. I got this band when I got my car serviced in January, and it says Faith, Hope, and Love. And I wear it a lot lately, you know, and I turn it so I can see faith, or I can turn it so I can see hope. Just keep it forefront in front of me. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. And I don't have to do this deal alone. And I'm forever grateful. Thank you.